Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 80. Sudama visits Lord Krishna, text 4. Translation. This is Prithvi Maharaj speaking. An astral head is one that bows down to the Lord in his manifestations among the moving and non-moving creatures. Real eyes are those that see only the Lord, and actual limbs are those which regularly honor the water that has bathed the Lord's feet or those of his devotees. Text 5. Sutta Goswami said, thus questioned by King Vishnurata, the powerful sage Bhadarayani replied, his heart fully absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Next 6. Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Krishna had a certain Brahmana friend named Sudama, who was most learned in Vedic knowledge and detached from all sense enjoyment. Furthermore, his mind was peaceful and his senses subdued. Living as a householder, he maintained himself with whatever came of his own accord. The wife of that poorly dressed Brahmana suffered along with him and was emaciated from hunger. Sudama's chaste wife was also poorly dressed, and whatever food she obtained, she gave to her husband. Thus she remained fatigued from hunger. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmana once approached him. Her face dried up because of her distress. Trembling with fear, she spoke as follows. Purport. According to Sridhar Swami, the chaste lady was especially unhappy because she could not obtain food to feed her husband. Further, she was fearful to approach her husband because she knew that he did not want to beg for anything other than devotion to the Supreme Lord. Om Ajnanandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama. This is a very fascinating chapter in the fascinating Srimad Bhagavatam. It shows the Lord in his Aishwarya Leela in Dwarka, receiving one of his childhood friends. And woven into this chapter are many interesting themes about how to live in this world to maximize your Krishna consciousness and how not to become overwhelmed by the ever-pressing perceived material necessities and practicalities. This is a very balanced chapter. You're going to hear about Sudama, who was very detached and a perfect Brahmana. You're also going to hear about his wife, who was detached also, but she felt it was her duty to be a bit more mindful of how much food there was in the house, especially since there wasn't any. I must say, I hope they don't mind, but reading this chapter, I thought of our dear God brother and God sister, Badahari Prabhu, Kosarupa Mataji, who are gracing us with their presence, along with, of course, His Holiness Palananda Maharaj. How to perform bhakti amidst the world of practical necessities. This is always the question. How to steer the ship through the ocean of practicalities, necessities, the ever impinging demands of material nature, while at the same time keeping in mind the real demand, which is to advance in spiritual life. As you go deeper into this chapter, you're going to find that it wasn't that Sudama was, shall we say, completely right in of itself. And it wasn't that his wife was, shall we say, more materialistic, and therefore she was bugging her husband, "We need more money, we need more money." No, both were actually playing their roles perfectly. She was simply thinking of his welfare. And as you hear in the commentary from Sridhar Swami, the chaste lady was especially unhappy because she could not obtain food to feed her husband. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that whatever food she would get, she would give to her husband, and therefore she was very weak, fatigued, and trembling. Of course, this standard is unbelievable to contemporary world. The contemporary standard as well. Forget that guy. How much is economic development a necessity? It does have a place, and Krishna consciousness does not overlook that. Often, when newcomers approach bhakti, they have this fear that in order to practice devotional service, just forget all economic affairs. And because you're not able to do that, therefore, forget about bhakti. Again and again, at our retreat weekends at New Nandagram, the same question comes again and again. Those of you who have attended, you know. Maharaj, excuse me, but how can it be possible to practice the bhakti yoga while at the same time one has to pay his way in this world? It seems not possible. Again, the same question. It is a core gut reaction. And especially there's the fear that, well, at least amongst young professionals or aspiring young professionals, there's the fear that if I become too Krishna conscious, I could lose my competitive edge in school and at the workplace, right? Become too spiritual, and therefore you're not able to function in the real world. So therefore, oftentimes the parents of such inquirers will advise them, "All right, it's nice you're going to the mandir. Maybe once a month you go to the mandir. You offer pranams to whoever's on the altar they have there at that mandir. You drop some coins in the mandir. Finished. Otherwise, your economic impetus may be spoiled." This chapter, Sudama Visits Lord Krishna, is very instructive. And in fact, I hope in future days you'll be able to hear from Badahari Prabhu and Kosher Brahmataji give class, especially on this chapter, because it is a very practical chapter. At the same time, it's a chapter of pure bhakti. It will show you that pure bhakti does not contradict practicality. Often people's definition of quote-unquote practicality is that, well, that practicality is one thing and pure bhakti is another thing. As if you get too much into pure bhakti, you get lost in some kind of spiritual cloud and you're no longer able to function. It's true that you are no longer able to function for material sense gratification. But as Prichit Maharaj is so eloquently speaking about here, all your senses will actually obtain the most perfect use engaged in devotional service. So therefore, he's describing that actual speech is what talks about the qualities of the Lord. Real hands are those that work for him. A true mind is one that always remembers him. An actual head, we find in today's first verse, is one that bows down to the Lord. Realize that those that only see the Lord and actual limbs are those who regularly honor the water that has bathed the Lord's feet or the feet of the Lord's devotee. Now, this is not Pritchett Maharaj just speaking poetically in a flowery way. He is actually describing the process of bhakti, which involves all your senses, as you know, in the service of the master of the senses. Our core problem, and at the root of our heart, is that we think our senses are meant for our pleasure. You have to analyze yourself and see how that monster lurks there. My senses are my business, and they're meant to get things for me. I don't mind sharing a little bit with some others. I don't mind doing a bit of puja for the gods, but my senses are basically my possession and meant for furthering my aims and the aims of my near and dear in relation to my body. That's it. Bhakti yoga may seem exotic because it has a completely different vision of what to do with your senses. Once you begin to engage your senses according to Krishna's plan, a whole different world opens up. And this is the wonder that a newcomer to Krishna consciousness experiences. Wow, I didn't know that there was another way of dealing with your senses, opening up to another realm. Sometimes, though, as we become older in devotional service, we lose sight of how we have been so wonderfully provided with food for our senses. And we begin to become familiar and not take the sensory engagement in devotional service so seriously. It seems too simple after a while due to your materially tinged thinking. It's too simple. Just bow down your head. Just see the Lord. Let your limbs receive sprinkles of water upon them that have honored the feet of the Lord. With your mind, you remember the Lord. With your tongue, you always glorify the Lord. Things can seem too simple because of the filter of our material mind. What is the solution for that familiarity? You start to become deadened a bit, wooden, desensitized to the glories of bhakti. Brother Hari Prabhu and I were talking about this on the airplane yesterday from Kiwi to Melbourne. And we were coming at the same point from different angles. That, for example, if you have, from the very beginning of your devotional career, profusely studied Srila Prabhupada's books, which I hope all of you are doing, you may, and it does happen often, hit a point after some years, maybe 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, where there's some kind of material feeling of familiarity that I've mastered all the contents, I know what's in every canto, I know the information, and therefore you don't feel that same desperate urge like a drowning man gasping for air. You don't feel that same urge you felt in the beginning. There's a sense of satiation that, okay, I'm dying sufficiently. One of my god brothers urges what for whenever he has a nice lunch, prasad, he takes his last bite and then says, I have dined sufficiently. So, how does this feeling creep in? 15 years down the road, 20 years down the road, I know some of you are thinking,
Well, I could just hang in there to be an early for 15 years.
I thought like that in the beginning, too. And then after the 15-year mark, you're thinking, oh, if I could just hang in there for 30 years. That's why it's always wonderful to see examples of senior Vaishnavas who have traversed the path decade after decade after decade. When I was hearing Aniruddha Prabhu, of course, who's a veteran himself, read the book distribution scores, and I heard His Holiness Kalananda Maharaj, I was just thanking Srila Prabhupada. How wonderful you are to have such disciples who, at an advanced material age, going out trying to distribute your books. I felt envious. Why can't I have this nectar? But then I also remembered Maharaj is also the Minister of Health, so he'd be the first to tell me, just calm down. So I mean, just all bodies are different. Especially after one's just come off of a year and a half of synthetic blood pressure medicine. But, of course, the real point is the spiritual dedication that outshines the material realities. And then you have Vadahari Bhagavan Kosarupa Pramantaji, married for 27 years. Same person. Yeah, the same. I remember Vadahari Prabhu from Los Angeles and Laguna Beach. 75 or 76? Yes. And Kosarupa Mataji living across the street from Laguna Beach Temple, 76, coming to the temple as a 15 or 16 year old girl. 50, yes. And then, years later, more than three decades later, you still see the same person as actively serving in Srila Prabhupada's mission. What to do when the years go by and you think you have mastered all of Prabhupada's books, you've read all the cantos, you've read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know it all. Based on what Vadahari Prabhu and I were discussing, we concluded, when you get that feeling, rebel against it. Recognize that it's remnants, shall we say, of your material intelligence, not attuned properly to the spiritual reality, which is unlimited. Traces of material intelligence are telling you that you've mastered the subject matter. You know the ins and outs. And sometimes that feeling even degenerates into thinking, well, Prabhupada's books, you know, they're for beginners, or they don't have depths to them. Now I need something more. Although Srila Prabhupada said himself that his books have everything in them for the beginning devotee and the most advanced devotee in Krishna consciousness. He said his books are like an apothec, a chemist, pharmacy, where all different prescriptions for different people, types of persons, different levels of disease are available. So, as the years go by and you start to feel acclimated, shall we say, acclimatized? Yes. I'm familiar with the environment of Prabhupada's books, yeah. Rebel against that feeling and go deeper. Reply that I know it's my material intelligence that's telling me this, but I'm not going to listen. I'm going to plunge ahead anyway, begging Krishna to uncover more of my spiritual senses so that I can see the spiritual reality that I'm dealing with. This is part of humility. Humility is not a question of something you do only when you're a new devotee. Often newcomers to Krishna consciousness, they often say this same point. Everyone's trying to tell you what to do. You don't know who to listen to. You got to be humble to this one, humble to that one, because you don't know anything. Prabhu this and Prabhu that. Everyone's more advanced than you. Oh, when will that day come when we're a few years down the road in our Krishna consciousness and we can have a perch on the pecking order? And there'll be newer ones than us if we can lord it over them. When a newcomer shows up at the temple or the loft, we can immediately drill them with questions. Do you know who the ninth avatar was? Do you know what the difference is between a planary expansion and this type of expansion? Tadikatma Rupa and so on. Of course, I know you don't do that, but there is this psychological longing in the heart that when will I achieve some stature? You can have that same mentality with Srila Prabhupada's books. When will I achieve recognize mastery of these books, and I can feel like I can move on a bit? No, we want to go the opposite direction. We always want to remain a humble servant at the feet of these books and a humble servant at the feet of the devotees. The more one actually advances in Krishna consciousness, the more you realize that you're everyone's servant. And indeed, that reality becomes sweet. In the beginning, it seems poisonous, bitter. I'm everyone's servant. I don't mind serving Krishna. I'll pick out one devotee, that'll be the guru, and I'll serve him. But to serve everyone? As you progress in bhakti, however, a sweet taste develops by seeing yourself as everyone's servant. That is the nature of the Sankirtan movement. You are serving the non-devotees with Krishna consciousness. Similarly, you're serving Srila Prabhupada's books by reading them and not taking seriously the thought or the material tendency of, I've read it all, and I've mastered it. I've read the cantos 3 times. I've read Chaitanya Charitamrita a couple of times. Bhagavad Gita endlessly. Endlessly? Well, 2 times. Nectar devotion? Yeah, once or twice, you know. Fish. Now that, when those feelings come, please remember, those of you who are younger, and maybe those of you who are older, you may be going through this now. Please remember, when that feeling comes, rebel. It's subtle. Strike back with Divyagyan, divine knowledge. These are my material senses talking. But actually, I know I'm dealing with the unlimited ocean of talks about Krishna. Just like Prichit Maharaj, he sets the example. In the previous chapter, King Prichit heard about Balaram's pilgrimage. And now he's saying to Shrinivas Goswami, Bhagavan Yani Chanyani Mukundasya Mahatmana. My Lord, O Master, why is Shrinivas Goswami Prabhu, Master, and Bhagavan, Lord? Because he's an ocean of Krishna Katha. He simply lives for Krishna Katha. Therefore, he is worthy to be called Prabhu, Master, and Bhagavan. As you know, not Bhagavan as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Bhagavan as one who is in complete connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore has potencies coming from Bhagavan. Prichit Maharaj wants to go deeper into the ocean of hearing about Krishna. So he says, I wish to hear about other valorous deeds, performed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mukunda, whose valor is unlimited. Anantavirya, that is a name for Krishna, one who has unlimited valor. In order to have valor, you have to be independent. Or you have to depend on someone who is completely independent. That's why you cannot say that there is valor in the material world. because everyone is so dependent on other dependent persons. Everyone is so dependent on so many conditions. That's why we have that phrase, conditioned soul. Think about it. It means a living entity who cannot do the slightest thing without being bound up by conditions. Everything depends on something else. So where is the valor when you're in such a situation? Prakriti sthani karshati. You're stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere. Mamayevamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. With your six senses, including the mind, you are struggling. And why are you struggling? Because you're dependent. And unless you find someone to depend on who is completely independent, there's no valor for you. You can't give your life any credit. Oh, I did this great. I successfully accomplished that. When every step you take in this world implicates you deeper in dependency. And there's nothing you can do about that materially. Krishna is the supreme independent. A characteristic he has, as described by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, is Swaraja Lakshmi. He is self-sufficient in fulfilling his desires. We have discussed this before. Even Krishna's associating with his devotees, even the most intimate devotees, is not a sign of his dependence, because those devotees are all manifestations of his energy. When Krishna wants to enjoy, his own pleasure potency manifests the objects of his enjoyment, the persons of his enjoyment. Therefore, he's still Swaraja Lakshmi, completely self-sufficient in satisfying his desires. Only that person can have valor. Otherwise, material existence is shameless and cowardly. As you plunge yourself in an unlimited, because you can't see the end of it, anadi karma phale, bhavi bhavana vajalti, endless struggle to find something dependable to depend on, someone dependable to depend on. Where is he? Where is she? Where is the place? Where is the job? Where is the knowledge that I can depend on? Where are the experts? Where's the nation I can depend on? Just like now in the USA, there's talk about they could be entering into a severe recession, worse than the mild temporary ones that hit 6 years ago or 10 years ago. This one could be a good one. And naturally, the politicians in office currently, they're shaking, because the worst thing that can happen to you when you're a politician in office is for the economy to go sour when you're holding a position. Because then the opposition can just blame you. Just see how you're not serving the people. The economy is going bad. Put us in office and we'll change the whole tide. They can't do anything about it. It's just the people are so, they're such pure devotees of economic expansion that anyone who promises them, I'll change the economy, I'll get it going. Yeah, okay, we'll try you. Let's depend on you. You failed. At the end of your term in office, the economy went down. So yeah, we have to switch to someone else, because the whole point of life is that the economy should flourish and we should have unlimited consumption without any problem. You couldn't deliver that. So now we have to depend on someone else. And the people are in anxiety, according to analysts, because the people actually thought property values will perpetually rise. Always, 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 always. It's been like that for the past 10 years, so that means always, forever. In that mood of what to do, the economy is going down. People look how to change their dependencies. Who can I depend on now? who will secure for me a happy, stable position in this world. So this characterizes our material quest. We're constantly dependent, and we're constantly looking for good dependency in this world. Whether a partner, or a nation, or a job, or an economy, something I've got to hang my coat on. I need a hook, a dependable hook to hang my coat on. What does Pritchett Maharaj depend on? He is depending on Shukadeva Goswami for hearing about the supreme independent person, Ananta Virya, who has unlimited valor. Remember once again that you can't really have valor unless you're completely independent or you're depending on someone who's completely independent. That's why devotees are valorous. And those who are sane, those who are intelligent, are attracted to devotees because they can see there's something different about their way of life. What they're seeing is valor. The valor that comes from depending on the Ananta Virya. So Pritchett Maharaj is saying, I wish to hear about other valorous deeds. And in making his request to Shukadeva Goswami, as always, Pritchett Maharaj amplifies that request with some statement of understood fact. O Brahmana, it is already understood and already accepted, in other words, that anyone who knows the essence of life and is disgusted with the quest for sense gratification, they'll not be able to give up the transcendental topics of the Lord, even if they hear them repeatedly. In other words, the repetition of hearing Krishna's glories has nothing to do with satiation. Your thirst simply increases. So therefore, watch it as you develop in your career in Krishna consciousness. Watch out for artificial feelings of satiation, because the real devotional experience is that you experience an ever-increasing thirst. Like Buddha Hari and I were also discussing on the plane how our godbrother Vaisheshika, he loves Srila Prabhupada's books, and Buddha Hari was saying how when they were in the car coming from the airport, yes, going to a festival at New Vrindavan, you know, Vaisheshika who just says, what did he say?
So do you have a book, or you know, what chapter do you want to go through and not want to talk? So we just pulled out a chapter and we went, you know, he memorized most of the verses, but we just went through and chanted them.
Yes. This is real life. Realization of the unlimited glories of the Lord. But what chapter do you want to go through? Not, what chapter have you heard before? Also, when I was staying at the Govardhan Ashram, Bhaktivedanta Ashram at Govardhan Hill, Keshava Bharati Maharaj was there, and Vaisheshika Prabhu was also there. And you would think that in such saturated rasa territory, they would be relishing perhaps the books of the Goswamis or some intimate texts. No, they were delighting every evening, reading Bhagavad Gita together and becoming amazed by its contents. And Buddha Hari Prabhu was telling me on the airplane yesterday, he had a Bhagavad Gita with him and he was expressing his realizations, how extraordinary the book is. This is real Krishna conscious life. That kind of life is beyond the range of our material senses, which try to bewilder us. They try to cheat you. You've already read it, you already know it, been there, done that. When those feelings strike you, rebel. Don't accept their presentations. Therefore, Pritchett Maharaj is commenting, if you actually know the essence of life, You cannot give up hearing the glories of the Lord. Now the point also is there, Pritchard Marsh is implying that sometimes people do give up the glories of the Lord, even after having repeatedly heard them. His point is, Pritchard Marsh's point is, they actually don't know the essence of life. Especially impersonalists, the Acharyas point out, especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that impersonalists may hear the glories of the Lord and then give them up once they feel sufficiently focused in their meditation. In other words, they consider that the ultimate goal of life is impersonal, and therefore, just to build your meditational powers and prowess, you need to focus on a particular deity. Whatever, Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, Ganesh, Durga, Panchopada, doesn't matter. And then once your mind settles down and you're focused, then you discard those deities and head for the impersonal Brahma. So yes, such persons give up hearing the glories of the Lord. Now, you'll say, well, we're not impersonalists, but how much are we tainted with impersonalism? Because it's actually that taint of impersonalism that makes us think we've mastered the glories of the Lord. It's a subtle point, but please think about it deeply. When you're in love with a person, you just love to hear the glories of that person, even from the mundane vision of what is love. I've seen, and we're speaking about mundane relationships, I've seen persons just constantly rehash memories and stories. Do you remember many years ago when we first met? Oh. Yeah. And, you know, they've said the story at least 20 times, and the hearers, their friends or relatives, have heard the story 20 times, but still, everyone gets some little flavor from it. That's why they keep doing it. Do you remember? One couple in New Zealand, sister of a devotee, was telling me, because just for scientific bhakti research, and also as a way of breaking the ice and getting to know people, if it's a married couple, I always ask, how did you first meet? And then the heart just opens up with all sorts of, you know, if it's been a favorable relationship. So I asked this devotee's sister, how did you first meet? And, well, 20 years ago, there was a parade in our little town of 5,000 people, and I was riding on one of the cars in the parade, you know, outside, I guess on the roof of on the bed of a truck. And the truck was decorated with flowers, and it was a small town country parade. And we had kind of like something like flower covered water bombs to throw on whoever we wanted. Yeah, amongst the people who were lining the streets in the huge town of 5,000. So as I was riding in the truck, you know, decorated in a flowery dress and, you know, flowery hat and, you know, the annual country parade, I knew he was the one I wanted. So I just waited with a flowery water bomb. And as we passed him, so then I asked her husband, so what did you think when that hit you? Oh, I knew that there was something to this. So they just delighted in telling this story, you know. They just created the whole scene once again of the country town of 5,000, the parade, the annual parade. Thousands of people. Yeah, maybe 30 or 40 or 50 watching. And then the magic moment when she throws the water bomb on him. He realizes, something got a hold of me. It must be love. They were so happy to tell the story. And I would ask them more questions about it. Well, how did you feel? And how did you feel? Then what happened? Isn't it? So there's a taste to it. How much more is there a taste to hearing and chanting about Krishna's glories, who's the only one with self-sufficient power, Anantavirya, Therefore, Prajna Maharaj is saying, if you're actually a devotee, because a devotee knows the essence of life, you will not give up hearing the glories of the Lord, even after repeated hearing. Impersonalism that corrodes the heart causes you to give it up. It's a subtle thing, because most devotees don't want to feel that they have impersonal tendencies. But when we offer our pranams to Srila Prabhupada, we say, Nirvisheshunyavadi, Paschatadishatai. Voidism and impersonalism, they are the disease of the West. That's what's underneath all the rampant sense gratification and animalistic behavior. There's no supreme person that I have to be held accountable to. There's no supreme person with senses that I should consider. Is impersonalism. Yes, but I'm still a spiritual person because I acknowledge that there's an all-pervading spiritual whatever, you know. That's as best as it gets. And then even persons who claim to be religious in the traditional Western sense, they lack knowledge of the Supreme Personality of God. They actually want to be personal. They want personalism. But they don't know anything about the Supreme Lord, so regardless of their longings and aspirations for bhakti personalism, they wind up with just impersonal tendencies. There's no choice, because they have no knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After explaining to Shukadeva Goswami that no one in their right mind can give up hearing the glories of the Lord, then Prajna Maharaj begins to describe the sensory wonderland of bhakti yoga. And this is what attracts newcomers, and it's also what should constantly, indeed eternally, attract older devotees. The sensory wonderland of bhakti. Our question when we wake up every morning should be, how am I going to engage my senses in Krishna's service? Maybe you can remember waking up some morning in your mundane life when you had some material expectations. There's going to be something good to get your material senses into that day. And you just contemplated, wow, soon I'll be doing this, soon I'll be there. Maybe you're about to go on a long trip, touring somewhere, to Thailand or something like that. Maybe there's a big concert that night. There's a sense of anticipation, expectation. We have unlimited more right to feel that way in bhakti. We should be overwhelmed by the sensory program of bhakti yoga, the sensory opportunities. I remember as a young devotee, maybe a 2-year devotee, 74, something like that, I was the New York temple, downstairs in the Sankirtan department. Our now Ramapad Swami was the Sankirtan leader. There was another devotee there. And then someone ran in and said, oh, the curtains of the deities have just opened. It looks beautiful. So I kind of just spontaneously blurted out, I want to go check it out. I've got to check it out. And all the other devotees started laughing because I was kind of using New York slang, you know. Check it out, brother. Yeah, get up there. Check it out. But I remember the sense of excitement I had. I got to check it out. I wrote up my phone, just started laughing. Check it out, brother. Go on up there. Check it out. But that's Krishna consciousness. Even the newcomer can feel that. What to speak of as you become older. Greeting the deities every day, associating with devotees. When we don't feel like that, we should question that lack. Don't take it as normal. Well, that's the way it is when you get to be an older devotee, you know. You've done a lot of service. You've done too much sankirtan. Where in the shastra do you see the expression, too much sankirtan? Now, there's always a point of doing devotional service with intelligence. Sometimes that's lacking, the intelligence. But there's never a question of too much sankirtan. Sankirtan means glorifying Krishna congregationally. How can it be too much? It's a question of our using our intelligence how to do devotional service properly so that we can go the distance. That's another thing, but there's no such thing as too much Sankirtan. Imagine, but hard with someone coming to too much kirtan. It can't be too much kirtan. Lord Chaitanya said, kirtaniya sadahari, always let there be kirtan. But how to do things intelligently, that's why we have management, that's why we have guides, leaders, to show us how to engage in the perpetual service of the Lord, the perpetual sensory program of the Lord. So, Sutta Goswami is going to butt in, so to speak, now. He says, thus questioned by King Vishnurat, the powerful sage Badarayani replied. And what's the nature of Badarayani, Sukadeva Goswami? His heart is fully absorbed in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, when you hear from Sukadeva Goswami, you are hearing a heart full of ecstasy. And we pray to the Lord that we may feel a drop of that ecstasy. That's why Srila Prabhupada said about his books, he said, you know, he wrote this at the BBT, actually anyone can translate. It's no big deal to translate from Sanskrit to English. But he said, my purports, they contain my devotional ecstasies. And by immersing your consciousness, bathing your consciousness every day with Srila Prabhupada's purports, you are indeed in touch with liquid bliss ecstasy. And gradually you become acclimated to that kind of realm. So, Sukadeva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that Sukadeva Goswami is going to reply to Prichamarata's questions, and Sukadeva Goswami is feeling even more ecstatic because Prichamarata is asking more questions about Krishna's pastimes. So in this way, we begin to hear about Sudama, such a qualified brahmana, devotee, most learned in Vedic knowledge, detached from all sense enjoyment. And the proof of his knowledge is that his mind is peaceful and his senses are subdued. Gana Vigana Chiptatma Kutastho Vijitendriya, Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, that the true sage, the true sadhu, is always equipoised because he's satisfied by the accumulation of Gana and Vigyana. Theoretical knowledge becomes realized knowledge, and therefore Chittatma, the self, is satisfied, Kutastho Vijitendriya, and then the senses are conquered. We're going to hear about the family of Sudama, the interactions about the economy, the financial affairs, the fear of the wife that I can't feed my husband, and now I'm going to have to approach him and tell him to remember his dear old friend Krishna. I'm going to have to request that he approaches Krishna for grihastha maintenance. And my husband doesn't like that kind of thing. But out of duty to him, this is the amazing thing. She wasn't doing this for herself. I need more stuff at home. You ever go to Krishna and ask him? No, she's thinking of her husband. Now, we should see this as devotee seva. She's thinking of how to serve the devotee of the Lord. And therefore she's asking him, please go see Krishna, your old friend. Because we need to have at least a minimum subsistence. So as I said, when you go deeper in this chapter, you'll see the interplay of both the wife and the husband, both who are correct from their particular point of view and their dealings. Both are correct. Therefore, at the end of the Leela, both of them will experience in an extraordinary way the glories of Lord Krishna. The wife was doing her duty, and Sudama was doing his duty. And the two of them combined to make such a powerful family, and that family attracted Lord Krishna's attention even more. He used them to display his unlimited opulence.